Good afternoon. You're very welcome to today's edition of Saturday with Clare Byrne. On today's programme, Sinn Féin agrees to entertain a coalition after the next election on a big weekend for the party. Leo pokes the bear over the border as Theresa May and Boris Johnson continue to dither over a solution for Northern Ireland. And a week of claim and counterclaim over homelessness leaves campaigners fuming. All of that to come with the panel shortly, but first it's time for the news now with Vivian Traynor. Vivian, thank you very much. This is Saturday with Clare Byrne, and you're very welcome to get in touch over the course of the next hour. Text us on 51551 or email saturday@rte.ie. The Twitter address is @SaturdayRTE. Joining us today in the studio, we have Maria Bailey, Fine Gael TD and Chair of the Housing Committee. Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin Finance Spokesperson. And Piers, you've just joined us from the RDS, where the Sinn Féin RDS is underway. Michael McDougall, Senator and former Taoiseach, of course, and former Justice Minister. Peter McVerry at the heart of the news this week again, homelessness dominating the agenda. And Seanan Murray, special correspondent with the Irish Independent, just off the plane from Gothenburg, where Leo Varadkar met Theresa May yesterday. And we'll find out what prompted The Sun to say that Leo should shut your gob and grow up. More on that a little bit later on. Well, Piers, I want to come to you first because, as I said, you've left the RDS to come and join us today. And it's a seminal moment, really, in time for Sinn Féin, because you took that decision last night that you would enter coalition with either Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil as a junior partner. That was a huge shift for you guys.
Well, the position we took is that the decision on entering a coalition in the South would be based on can we deliver a Republican programme for government? And it will be the members of the RDS who would decide that at a specially convened RDS. It is a change in relation to our previous position, which simply ruled out unless we were the largest party. But there's no doubt about it. Our vision, our ambition is to be the largest party in this state and to lead it next government. And we say that not because we just want to be in government. We believe that the health and housing crisis will only be addressed if Sinn Féin is in government. So we want to see that change. We want to deliver that change that communities length and breadth of this island are looking for.
But do you accept that as part of that decision, that if you have those conversations about coalition, that you'll have to compromise?
In any coalition, even if you're the largest political party, you would have to compromise, because that's what coalitions are about. That's what coalitions in the North are about. But it also is about ensuring that there is a threshold there that will deliver rights for people, that will tackle the major crisis that we have. So if we aren't tackling in a programme for government the crisis that we have in homelessness, housing, health, preparing a roadmap for Irish unity, that's the kind of thresholds that we're setting ourselves, and that the party membership would set for Sinn Féin in whether we would go into government or not in the South.
Have you thought about where those compromises would come? Where your red lines are?
No, it's far too early at this point in time. We're preparing our manifesto for the next election. That could happen at any time. We're very clear and we're very ambitious for this country. So, you know, there's certain principles, but it's not a case of in relation to red lines. Our project at this point in time is to continue to convince more and more people to vote for Sinn Féin, to convince them that we're genuine when we say that we have the policies under the leadership of Ona Brin to deal with the housing crisis, and under Louise O'Reilly to, you know, to create a proper health system, to a single tier health system that will open the hospital beds that were closed by Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, and recruit the frontline staff that will deal with the waiting list. So okay, we need to do that job. We need to convince more people.
So Maria Bailey, will you talk to them? Would you consider it?
No. I mean, Sinn Féin and Fine Gael are economically on completely different sides of the sphere on this one. But I mean, I note what Piers is saying, but in the last formation of government, I don't think Sinn Féin actually opened up negotiations with anybody or saw any willingness to try and formulate any form of a government. So we'll wait and see what happens here. But I think, you know, words is all we're hearing. We're not seeing actions.
But they've taken the decision, they've shifted their policy. And I think you're saying that this is a clear shift from where you were. So, yes, we know they didn't enter talks the last time, but now they're saying we will.
Well, it won't be with Fine Gael, but I mean, like, I work very well with Deputy Ona Brin on the Housing Committee. And while we might differ on certain things, we will always find a compromise. But economically, we're on polar opposites. So, look, to say the thing, we're not tackling any crisis that we're dealing with is just completely untrue. And we're actually on the ground doing things that we need to be doing. And in the area of housing, which Pearce has actually referenced there, and there was some commentary around this during the week. I mean, we have a lot more that we need to do here. And by no means are we saying that, that we don't. But, I mean, to say that we're not tackling the crisis or the problem, we have 1,200 families and individuals that left homelessness this year.
Okay, and we're going to deal with homelessness in a moment in detail, but I just want to stick with Sinn Féin for a couple of minutes, because Michael McDougall, you've written about this and I was reading back in some of your columns, and one of the things you say is Middle Ireland does not want a coalition between Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin and will do whatever has to be done to prevent it.
Well, I think that that's true. I mean, I think that...
What do you base that on?
Whereas Sinn Féin obviously has to make its own mind up as to how it goes into elections. I think you'll find that Micheál Martin will make it very clear he's not going into the next election on the basis of being open to a coalition with Sinn Féin.
Well, some of his TDs are open to
and
it.
I think that he's settled that within the party. But the point I'm making is it's up to the Irish electorate to decide the outcome of an election, not up to party leaders. And it's the duty of everybody to who gets elected to try to implement the policies. So in this context, I think that, you know, one of the problems at the moment about having Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil where they are in the late 20s or early 30s in terms of percentage support, one of the problems arising from that is that neither of them on any realistic prognosis is going to form a government by themselves. And the people are going to have to choose either, if things go on as they are, between the new politics of support from outside, or alternatively a grand coalition between them, or alternatively allowing Sinn Féin into office. And I think the next election is going to be very interesting from that point of view, because I do believe that the great majority of people in Middle Ireland do not want Sinn Féin in government, and
don't want
a deal done behind closed doors, even if it is ratified by Ardesh and our special conferences. They don't want a left-wing government dominated by the views of Sinn Féin.
Okay, but if Sinn Féin go in as a junior partner, as we said and discussed, they will have to compromise, and you know all about that from your time with the PDs.
Yes.
Do you not think that this is a sign of Sinn Féin's political maturity in taking this decision last night?
Well, I think the difference is that, I mean, when the Progressive Democrats went into the 1989 election on foot of a proposed deal with Fine Gael, or when they formed their coalitions with Fianna Fáil, there was economic and political compatibility between the two parties. There were differences in emphasis, but they were not radically divided by
ideology. But Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin are not radically divided either.
I think, Claire, you're forgetting what Sinn Féin actually, what the zeitgeist of Sinn Féin actually is. I mean, they are the party who had close relations with Castro's regime in Cuba, the FARC in Colombia, ETA. Their economics are far left, and there is a Marxist overlay to their economics. And nobody should be fooled about that. All you have to do is look at Unfublucht. It makes common cause with Marxist movements around the world. So, I mean, they are to the left of the left, if I may put that use that phrase about them. And, I mean, it's quite clear that for either Fianna Fáil or for Fine Gael to go into coalition with them would involve a coalition or a mismatch of very radically opposed ideological opponents.
Pierce?
Yeah, well, look, the debate needs to be about the issues as opposed to who are the partners and which future coalition would happen, and it needs to be about
but
what
on,
type
on
of
Marxist
program
economics.
Well,
is that
look,
who you are?
The one thing that is sure is that Middle Ireland, and indeed the rest of Ireland, rejected Michael McDowell's vision for Ireland, his vision along with the PDs. And, you know, during his time in government, he was central in terms of the economic policies that were practiced along with Fianna Fáil at that time that drove our economy off the cliff. So they've rejected that. The people, and this is where I do agree with Michael McDowell, it will be the people that decide. We have a mandate at this point in time. We want to implement and use the power that we have through the ballot box to deliver the type of change. Of course, there is major economic differences between us and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Like, those parties have basically run the state for the last 100 years in their own interest.
And yet you're saying you're willing to do a deal with them if they'll do one with you.
No, on the basis of a genuine programme for government. So, you know, and this is where it really challenges those that believe in the status quo, challenges those in Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, because we wouldn't tolerate a situation where banks pay no taxes, or where individual bankers aren't being held to account, or where multinational tax corporations are using this country as their next tax loophole. This is the type of change that Sinn Féin would be bringing about in that sphere, along with many other issues. So it will get down to the details of, can we, with other political parties, independents and all of the rest who have a mandate, can we sit down and agree a programme for government? It will be based on the exact same principles of our participation in government in the North. Will it deliver rights for the Irish people? Will it address the major problems and challenges that Irish society face? And if it does measure up to those tests, then we will put it to an Ardesh. Of course, it is Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil's. It's in their interest to keep us out, because they don't want the type of change.
Well, are
that
you
we
then?
Want to bring
are you
about.
Then driving them together?
What we're trying to do is to get as much support from the Irish people. I passionately believe in the vision of Sinn Féin. I passionately believe that we have the policies and that we have the leaders to deliver for our society. And I also believe that the time will come when we will be the largest political party in the state. Now, it's my job, it's all of the members, the 3,000 members that are gathering at this Ardesh and our supporters out there, to continue the work that we're doing, to sell to the Irish people that we're different, that even though that other parties have made promises and let them down in the past, that we're genuine when we say that we will confront these issues head on,
so,
if we get the opportunity.
So if you drive Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael together, they form the next government, you sit there as the main opposition, and you have the next period of time, the next Dáil term to grow and become that big party, as you say. Is that what you're at here? Or are you waiting for Micheál Martin to change his mind?
No,
and
well,
do you
can
think
I
that
just say
happen?
To you, that is not our strategy. Our strategy is to be in government after the next election, to be the lead party in that
so
government.
So how are you going to go about changing the minds of those who won't do business with you?
Well, look, you know, parties will say these things at this point in time for their own party political interests, and that's fine. That's party politics.
You think Fine Gael will do business with you in
I'm
time?
I'm not saying that. You refer that there's many people in the front benches of Fianna Fáil, I think, that are in the media today, not agreeing with Micheál Martin's position. So this is about forming a government. This is about looking at the mandate that we have. Obviously, if we don't have a mandate, or if we don't have a strong mandate, it will become an impossible task. But our job is to go out there and secure the biggest mandate that's possible. And I believe passionately that there's enough people that want to see an end to the housing and homeless crisis, enough people that want to see the health system fixed, that we can secure that mandate.
So when the cards fall after the next election, people might change their minds. Party leaders might change their view of
Sinn
Féin.
Well, we're making it very clear in a very honest way to the Irish people that we are open to discussion with any political party and any individuals who have a mandate to secure a programme for government on the basis of core Republican principles. That's what we're saying as a party leadership. We will go into negotiations with anybody at that point in time based on our mandate. And if we have, if we can meet a threshold, we will put that to the membership of our party and they will decide.
Okay. Does this make it difficult then for Sinn Féin to continue attacking Fianna Fáil for propping up Fine Gael when you're saying you'd do exactly the same thing?
Well, we wouldn't prop up Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil. And that's why they know. That's why they don't want us in there. Because they know that the golden circles will be broken. They know that we will bring accountability to the heart of government. They know that we will not stand up for corruption that has been going on in Irish society. So we won't be propping up. And if that was the scenario, there is no doubt about it that members of Sinn Féin would reject that idea just to go in there to prop up. We are not hungry for power. What we are is we're hungry for change. And that's what I believe most of the people out there is of the similar view. It's our job, as I say, to bring them over through voting for Sinn Féin in the next election.
OK, Michael McDougall, you want to come back in here?
Well, yeah, I mean, what Pearce is saying, he's carefully avoiding the question of whether their economic policies are based on Marxist principles, and I believe they are. And all you have to do is read on Fublet back over the years and you'll see that they are, and all of the examples they choose to praise.
Give me an example of our economic policy at the minute.
Cuba.
Our economic policy.
Sorry, I'm talking about your sympathies lie with Marxist regimes around the world. They do. I mean, there's no point in denying it, Pearce, and you haven't denied it. And the simple fact is that Irish people do not want a hard-left socialist republic of the kind that the provisional movement has been arguing for 30 or 40 years. We don't want that in Ireland. And I believe that Middle Ireland will reject it. And let's remember one thing, Piers, that you're at now 14% of the vote, which is where the Progressive Democrats were when they were founded. You're not anywhere near getting an overall majority. You've slipped down to 14% support. So the idea that you are facing up to realities now and realising that your only role is, in fact, as a minority partner in government, that's one thing for you to decide. But the Irish people are also entitled to decide, do they want your party in government? And they're entitled to reject.
Of course they are. And when I joined this party, and this is my 23rd Ardesh, I think we were at 2% of the vote. Yeah. And over the last 10 years, we have incrementally increased that vote to 7%, to 10%, to 14%. In the next election. And as I say, it will be up to the Irish people, but it's the job of me as a Republican leader to convince people to join with me in relation to shaping a new society. And, you know, look, you're entitled to your view. Obviously, the Irish people have rejected your view. Our policies, and we do support left-wing governments in other places, we support, and we had the MEP from the Catalonian region there. He had a standing ovation. We support democracy in that area and their right to succession. But we also have a right to put forward, and we have gained strong political support for that we want to bring equality into relation to economic principles. Now, you disagree with that because you're the person as Minister for Equality, believe that inequality is a good thing in Irish society.
I never said inequality is a good thing. And the second thing is, I mean, the Irish people are entitled to be reminded that your MEPs sit with the communists in the European Parliament. So let's be clear what the truth is about this. This is the truth.
And Fianna Fáil sit with the Tories.
With the Liberals.
And Fianna Fáil sit with the Tories.
The Liberals.
No, with the Tories. No, they're not. Fianna Fáil MEP is aligned to the gripping of the Tories.
Sean O'Reilly, do you want to come in there?
Yeah, one of the Fianna Fáil TDs is...
They only have one.
Yeah. Oh, we're MEPs. Yeah, that's right.
Brian,
yeah,
they tend to be with the Liberals, with the Alliance of Liberals.
Yeah,
they're part of the Liberals.
Well, I think one of the areas that Sinn Féin can become more politically mature is in the area of Brexit, because it does have an important part to play when it comes to negotiations. And Pat Leahy has a very interesting piece today in the Irish Times about how the Sinn Féin TDs or MPs could take their seats in Westminster. Obviously, the arithmetic doesn't work in that they can structurally change things fundamentally, but of course, just their presence there when you're talking about the importance of Northern Ireland. And it's really important, because even when I was covering the UK election a few months ago, the lack of understanding about what's happening in the North and the reasons why Northern Ireland should be given a special status or special arrangements within the European Union is so misunderstood. And it was misunderstood or neglected during the whole process during the Brexit debate. And the fact that Sinn Féin doesn't think that it should evolve its position is quite questionable.
Pat Leahy also suggests that the Northern Executive could be relaunched for a trial period of 6 months to get through this Brexit period, this crucial time. What do you say to that, Piers?
I haven't read Pat Leahy's piece, and I have a huge regard for Pat Leahy as a journalist, but I think in relation to just those comments of what's in his piece, I think he's very, very misguided in relation to that. First of all, our position of abstentionism in terms of the British Parliament has been overwhelmingly endorsed by nationalists across the six counties. This was the key debate on the doorsteps. It was the key issue that the SDLP put up. And people rejected.
Okay.
People rejected Irish nationalists, MPs, going to Westminster. They're turned
okay,
their
leave
back.
Leave that aside for a minute. But on that point, relaunch the Northern Executive. Get it together while we're going through this crucial period of negotiation with the UK and the EU.
Well, we want the Northern Executive up and running.
We need to compromise.
Well, what we want to do, and this
practice what you preach, and the
well, Maria,
that you've just
what should we compromise on? Is it what broken commitment should we compromise on?
Well, that's up to you.
Which
to
one?
Decide.
No, you're telling me to compromise.
Sorry, I'm not saying you. I'm saying Sinn Féin.
Well, Sinn Féin.
I will always talk about the party, not the person. I won't make it personal.
Yeah.
But you've had 11 months to come up with a compromise. We've had budgets imposed up there. We, as a government, would like to have a First Minister and Deputy Minister to deal with and negotiate in relation to the Brexit talks. I mean, that would really help move things along between the negotiations between Ireland and England. And I think that is a real stumbling block for us.
Well, first of all, let's be clear. The Northern Executive isn't sitting because there has been reneging on commitments that have been given in the past. Commitments going back to the Good Friday Agreement, the St Andrews Agreement, the Fresh Start Agreement, the Stormont House Agreement, all of those agreements, certain parts of them have been reneged on. When those commitments are put in place, back again, we will be back into
an
executive.
Is it worth it? Is it worth holding out on those things, including the Irish language strategy?
Well, you should never...
When we're going through what we're going through at the moment.
It's far more than the Irish language strategy. It's about making sure that the money there is for inquests. It's about making sure that there is the petition of concern in the Good Friday Agreement is not abused, as was agreed by the DUP in the Stormont or in the Fresh Start Agreement. You can't be in a partner in government where your partner in government continue reneges on commitments. Now, there has been progress made in relation to the talks. That has happened over the last 10 months. But this, these phases of the talks have now stalled. Now what has to happen is there has to be an intergovernmental conference between the both governments, and they now need to look at how they are going to deliver on the rights that were already enshrined in St Andrews in the Good Friday Agreement and other agreements. In relation to the Assembly, and you know, if you've got the Assembly up and running, that that's some type of magic wand in terms of Brexit. Extremely naive.
No, I didn't say it would magic just wand. No, I said it would be helpful. I didn't say a magic wand.
Okay,
and
no.
The way I like to solve things is around a table.
Yeah, of course. But let's be clear. The DUP are a part of, are propping up the government in a confidence and supply arrangement, the Tory government's in Westminster. As part of that, written down in that document is they will vote for all of the proposals from the Tories in relation to Brexit. If you somehow think that Sinn Féin, who are opposed to Brexit, who were the party who put special status on the table, who were instrumental in relation to the motion that went through the European Parliament, if you think somehow that we are going to be able to agree with the Brexiteers of the DUP, that's very, very naive. Very, very naive, because you have...
I also
know that
Michelle
like saying,
O'Neill only mentioned Brexit once in her speech last night.
That's... Well, that's,
that shows the priority of Sinn Féin.
But it's not really about negotiating with the DUP per se. What I was saying was that if you're able to introduce, even in the British political environment, the concerns of people in the north of Ireland, it doesn't exist when you're talking to any British politician or even the press in the UK. The problems that way will arise if there is a hard border on Northern Ireland. And the fact that if you had 7 MPs from Sinn Féin there, at least bringing something to the table in terms of the debate, then that definitely would be an advantage.
Well, first of all, our 7 MPs are in London and at Westminster and talking to MPs and lobbying MPs, and I've been over there myself in relation to Brexit, meeting with the Secretary of State along with our MPs on this issue all the time. So it's not a case that they're sitting at home in Belfast or in Derry or wherever. They're over there doing this. We're meeting with Theresa May next week. We will be doing that with Theresa May. We've been meeting with Simon Coveney, Leo Varadkar, and we will continue to do that. Our members of Parliament, we have the largest representation of any Irish delegation in the European Union. We have been able to shape the motion going through the European Parliament in relation to protecting the Good Friday Agreement in all its parts, which is crucial. And as I said, from the very word go, we put the issue of special status for the North within the European Union right at the centre stage of these negotiations.
Okay,
we were dismissed at that time. Now it has got traction not only in Ireland, but right across the European Union.
Leo Varadkar met Theresa May yesterday in Gothenburg. Shona Murray, you were there. Will you explain to us why The Sun, the UK edition of The Sun, is so angry today and prompted to write, they have some advice for Ireland's naive young Prime Minister, shut your gob and grow up. His rookie diplomacy, puerile insults and threats to veto trade negotiations are bringing a catastrophic hard Brexit ever closer.
Yeah,
what
I mean,
happened?
It actually would be kind of almost amusing if it wasn't so dangerous and so simplistic in stirring up old divides between the UK and Ireland. And in fact, Leo Varadkar said specifically yesterday on several occasions that he was not willing to use a veto. So the use of the term veto is irrelevant here. But what he did say was, first of all, there was no change after his meeting with Theresa May, in that the UK haven't taken into account that it's just not possible for them to leave the customs union and the single market and still engage and still have a normal situation and protect the Good Friday Agreement and not have a physical border. They reject any idea that there would be a special status for Northern Ireland, because they don't want the North to be in any way separated from the UK. And they also, even if there was a special arrangement, they want to be able to have their own trade agreement. So it's, as Leo Varadkar said again several times, it's the UK wanting to have its cake and eat it and not comprehending or understanding the deep concerns on the island of Ireland when it comes to what could happen if there is a hard Brexit.
Okay. And so what we know about their strategy, they just want to move on to stage two, don't they? They don't want to have to deal with this now.
Yeah, they've no interest in dealing with it in any way, shape or form. And that was made clear throughout the referendum. It's made clear when you listen to the rhetoric from people like Boris Johnson, from Theresa May, from the discourse in the UK in terms of the body politic. It's quite disturbing. One of the interesting things that says in The Sun is that Leo Varadkar's priority should be that he's not picking holes in our position. Well, the UK hasn't had a position. It's been 18 months since the referendum and it hasn't actually brought any solutions forward. And what the Irish government government is demanding, is that there's concrete solutions, or at least some concrete wording to say that there won't be a return to the physical border of the pass, and they haven't been able to come up with that. But when the Irish government in the task force document that was leaked last week said, well, look, here's how we'll do it. We'll have a special situation for the north and we'll have regulatory equivalence so you can remain within a customs type arrangement. David said that that would be testing the economic integrity and the constitutional integrity of the UK, and again rejected it roundly, but still haven't come up with any solutions themselves. And time is ticking, because the next deadline is, of course, the next summit, which I think is the 14th of December in a couple of weeks' time.
Mm-hmm. And nothing's going to happen before then, you would imagine.
No, I'd say, first of all, I mean, the Sun, the English edition of the Sun, is part of the Murdoch Empire.
Yeah.
Let's remember, again, the truth behind this. The Murdoch Empire is wholly hostile to the European Union. It has called for its destruction. Fox News in America and some English Murdoch papers have attacked the very idea of the European Union. Fox backed Trump. Trump backed Le Pen and called for the Dutch and other people to reject the European Union. So this is all part of a piece, if you like. And I mean, when it comes to the Sun itself, I mean, the old phrase that they put, the rant into ignorant, yeah, I think really does apply here. I mean, how where did they get from yesterday that Leo Varadkar had insulted anybody? I don't remember any words of his which could be taken by anybody, no matter how sensitive, as even approaching.
I think there was consensus, though, that there was a hardening of the Irish government line, both from Simon Coveney and Boris Johnson.
Being clear about what you're saying, it doesn't mean insulting anybody else unless they want to take insult. And the truth is that the British position, as Seanan said, is completely unclear. The cabinet is completely divided. We had Boris Johnson here in Dublin, himself and Michael Gove are conducting a mini civil war within the English cabinet, trying to put pressure on Theresa May not to make any concessions. And go back to Michael Gove and Johnson. Well, Michael Gove in particular, he's the man who viciously attacked the Good Friday Agreement as an abject surrender of everything that the British Tory Party stands for. So, you know, we have to remember who we're dealing with here.
On the face of it, there's a hardening of the position in terms of the rhetoric and the words and the language used by the Taoiseach yesterday, for example, when he said nothing has changed. But really, that document that was leaked last week was always Ireland's position, that there wouldn't be something we could never accept, was something that which meant that we go back to the borders of the past. It wasn't a hardening position. What's happened is that time is ticking away, and also you have the British press now turning to the Irish government and Ireland's position and actually taking notice of it. It's just that, it's that, you know, when I saw that piece, it was leaked in the Telegraph last week, saying that the Irish government is increasing demands on the UK, demanding it stays in the customs union. That's not the case.
Yeah.
And the task force document was already in situ for the last few months, so there hasn't been a hardening position.
Yeah.
There's been a hardening of words, because there's frustrations, clear frustrations. The British say they're leaving the EU on the 29th of March 2019, and still we've got nowhere close to any decision, and then they haven't come up with any solutions. And again, you know, David Davis was saying today or yesterday that, you know, the EU needs to start making concessions. Well, the EU didn't want the UK to leave the EU, and Britain hasn't come forward with any solutions yet. So in what way is it a hardening position? It's just saying, look, you know, this was your idea, but what are you going to do about it?
Okay, last word, Maria Bailey, on this.
I think we've come a long way through these negotiations, and of the three areas, especially around the financial settlement and the citizens' rights and movement and all that, we've come a long way. We'd probably get somewhere past the first phase on that. But in the last phase, being Ireland's issue, I mean, we have huge support from within the EU and our negotiation team at Michel Barnier. I mean, we've been very strong in this, and I think the Taoiseach's comments yesterday, they were very firm, but they were very respectful of the situation. We weren't the people who decided to leave here. It's up to Britain to come up with solutions here on this as well. But what's more important here is around the issues around Ireland and the border. And, you know, at no point do we ever want to see a border back in this country. These are people's lives and livelihoods that we're dealing with here, and that has to remain at the forefront of any negotiations.
Okay, and we're going to talk about the furore around homelessness over the course of the last week or so after this break. Now, over the last few days, commentary around homelessness sparked fury. Let's take a listen to some of what was said.
Ireland has one of the lowest levels of homelessness. We're actually a country by international standards compared with our peers that has a low level of homelessness.
It is not good enough that over 3,000 children are without a permanent home, that families are residing in hotels, or that there are individuals sleeping on the streets of our cities. However, neither is it acceptable to hear commentators talking down our country. Over the past few years, we've seen this narrative reflected in the national media. Some of this narrative has seeped into international coverage of our housing system and is damaging to Ireland's international reputation.
Homelessness is complicated, particularly when you're dealing with vulnerable adults and children. And people don't become homeless overnight, usually. It's a chaotic lifestyle that people lead. They have particular problems and they need to be worked with.
OK, that was Eileen Gleeson there, the head of the Dublin Regional Homeless Executive. Peter McVerry, you were very angry during the week. I heard you talking about this. Yesterday, Catherine Murphy, the TD, called on Eileen Gleeson to resign. What do you say to that?
No, I'm not calling on Eileen Gleeson to resign. In fact, Eileen Gleeson's comments weren't the ones that offended me or upset me most. It was Leo Varadkar's. To say that we have a less of a homeless problem than other countries, first of all, is incorrect. And secondly, reflects the fact that he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's quoting from an OECD report of 2015. Our homeless numbers have doubled since then. And explicitly in the introduction to that report, it says you cannot use these figures to compare homelessness between countries because countries use different definitions of homelessness. In particular, 15 of the 30 countries whose data was provided include as homeless people living with friends. Are people still living with their family because no alternative accommodation is available? If we included in our homeless figures people who are sofa surfing with friends and adults who are still living with their parents unwillingly because they cannot find accommodation they can afford, our homeless figures wouldn't be 8,000, they'd be 80,000.
And what do you think is going on then? Because Leo Varadkar said it, Owen Murphy said it, and Damien English said it.
I think it just reflects the fact that homelessness is not a priority for this government. We have an emergency, and I get no sense of any emergency or any crisis from the government. It's business as usual. I'll give you an example. I had a phone call yesterday from a man, and he has a derelict building. It's a building that's been lying empty for the last number of years. It's divided into four apartments. He offered it to the local authority. It's not a Dublin local authority. He offered it to the local authority under the lease and repair scheme so that he would lease it to the local authority and they would renovate it and they would deduct the cost of the renovations from the rents over the next few years. The local authority came out to see it and they said it doesn't meet the fire regulations. And he said, of course it doesn't. It's been derelict for the last few years. They said, until it meets the fire regulations, we cannot even consider whether we will accept
no
it on the lease.
That would be part of the renovation.
I would have thought
plan.
So. But he had to put in fire doors and fire alarms before they would even consider whether they would accept it. This is business as usual. You tick the boxes. And if one of the boxes doesn't tick, you reject it. This is business. There's no sense of we have an emergency and we need to introduce emergency measures, flexible measures, and do everything possible to get every single apartment and house back into use. So to me, this is not being treated by government as
Maria
as
Bailey,
an,
what
as
do you say to
him?
Look, I have great respect for Father Peter McVerry and the work that he does. And he's looking at one section of what we're trying to do here. And I mean, there's been fantastic work has been done in this area, not alone with the Housing First model, which we will be expanding on. And that was a model that you came to us with, Peter. But there's huge work being done here. And to say it's not a priority, like, I don't know how much more we can say in relation to this. It is the biggest budget of any government department. There are so many things happening. There's over 80 actions all happening at one go. And as I said on Thursday morning, in order to get supply, which is the underlying issue here across all sectors of our housing problem, in order to get that supply, we need social housing, affordable housing and private housing all to work together in tandem with each other to get supply.
OK, that's one side of it. But why is Fine Gael trying to, as Niamh Randall from Simon said during the week, reframe the narrative around housing?
But we're not.
Damien English admitted it very clearly. He said that in our international standing, our reputation is being damaged because we're talking about our homelessness all of the time. Owen Murphy said it to me on the television on Monday night. He repeated what Leo Varadkar said. It wasn't a slip of the tongue. It wasn't an off-the-cuff remark. It is Fine Gael's strategy.
Not good enough. And that line of not being good enough,
but
I don't
hear
the that
worst.
Being played
don't
anywhere.
Worry, because we're not the worst.
No, no, he didn't say that. I was standing beside the Taoiseach when he said it, right? And he said it is not good enough. And I didn't hear that being played anywhere in any interview this week. There were snapshots. But you'll have to just give me time to answer this question here, because I spend a huge amount of time on housing. It's the main reason I got into national politics, was to make a difference in this area, and not only in social housing but in affordable housing, which is equally a problem, but people don't shout as loud about that. So, and you know, Clare Dunleary is my constituency in the area I represent, and it's one of the most expensive areas to either rent or to purchase. So we have a huge amount of work to do here in affordable housing, which we will deliver, and we are delivering on state-owned land. But in the area of where most need is required is in the area of homelessness. And we have 1,200 families that have left homelessness in the last year.
Okay, now, but your party want us to stop talking about it. That's what Damien English said.
Why am I here today? If you want us to stop talking about it, why am I at leaving my two children at home and not bringing one to a birthday party? Why am I in your studio today if you want me to stop talking about it? This is a number one priority of this government, and I am so passionate about this issue. We have to look after all sectors of society here.
Well,
not
are you
just
cross
one
with Damien English then for
I
saying
absolutely
what he
am
said?
Not, because I wish you were replaying lines and speeches that he's been talking about for the last year and a half, which is not what's happening here. I mean, what I see is happening here is an opportunity for opposition parties to attack the government, and that's fine, that's their role to do that.
We've left the gate open this week. You really have.
Hands up if we have, right? But I mean, the facts are there, and I don't want to get into stats or comparing us to any European policies. I'm not interested in that. What I'm interested about is the person who's in a situation today, tomorrow or next week that we need to help and look after. And that is where our policies are focused and driven. But we cannot do that without all of the sectors in the construction industry, which was broken. We cannot do that without those working.
Okay. There is a huge problem with affordable housing. That's people whose income is too big to qualify for social housing and too small to qualify for a mortgage. The government 2 years ago promised an affordable housing policy, and we haven't seen it yet. In the last 6 months, every single day, 15 new people have presented as homeless. The government strategy Rebuilding Ireland to reduce homelessness was launched in July 2016. And every single month for the last 15 months, the number of homeless people, the number of homeless families and the number of homeless children has gone up. Now, after 15 months, if the problem is still getting worse, the dogs in the street would say the policy isn't working. And it's not working. The numbers continue to go up and up and up.
I really don't want to get into a discussion about numbers, because that is of no reassurance to somebody who's in a situation.
It's not,
today,
but
right?
It's key
but
to understanding policy.
There's 364 a week people housing solutions being met here, right? I was out in Matterday in Drumcondra, one of the family hubs that's out there, and CrossCare actually managed it for about 30 families. And in the first 7 to 8 weeks there, over half those families had left and gone into long-term solutions. So, look, there's a lot of intern solutions are in place until we get supply up and running here. We always said it was going to take time. And I know it's really tiring for people to listen to that, and we need them to stick with us. But as any of us know, sitting around this table, like, we'd love to see a new house decided today and built tomorrow. That just does not happen. You know, like... Peter, you were part of the Rebuilding Ireland, as well as many other people, in putting together this policy. And what we saw in former policies was where you were trying to tackle homelessness in isolation, you can't do that. You need all sectors working here in order to provide homes for people who need them. And that is what we are doing. We have 800 voids come back into use in the last year. Now, I'm not disputing figures with you in any shape or form, Peter, right? They are far too high, right? But what we have to do is work together to find solutions that will work and that are working. And we are seeing There's almost 20,000 houses were granted planning permission. They take time to build. From where we were 2 years ago, that's 50%.
Well, Lorcan Serve from DIT says that 7,000 units will probably be built this year. It's very far away from the 18,000
that you desired. What's he basing that on, though? Because I saw his article, Claire, and I don't know what he's basing it on. I saw another article during the week, and they never have to qualify where they're getting their figures from.
Okay, well, if Lorcan Serve wants to get in touch with us and set us straight on that. Michael McDougall wants to come in here, then I'll come back to you.
Could I say something? I think, going back to your original question, which was, is the fact that three ministers suddenly came out and said the problem isn't as bad as everybody's saying it is, was that just a coincidence that the same thought struck them all at the same time? And I don't think it was. I think this is part of the fruits of this strategic communications unit, which is deciding to put out lines and deciding to get government ministers to take up the line and to project it. And I think it's backfired on this particular occasion. And when you think that €5 million is going into that unit per annum, then you suddenly say, well, where are the priorities of the government?
And going back to Peter,
Peter's point, I mean, is there a sense of urgency? I was driving down through the city centre the other day at Dorset Street, and I saw flats near Dominic Street, and I saw a lot of them boarded up. I saw flats in near my own place in Ranelagh boarded up. These are corporation flats or city council flats in Dublin boarded up. I don't really think
there's a sense
of urgency about these matters.
But do you not accept what Maria Bailey has said, that she's practically devoting her political life to trying to solve this?
I will fall by the sword on this one. I stand for something.
Sorry, I'm not suggesting you don't.
But the government do, because I'm at these meetings, right? So I'm not on my own on this one. I see how hard they are fighting to make this happen. We are on over 800 sites throughout the country, delivering about 11,000 social homes for people. They're either on site or in the pipeline about to happen. I was on local authority for a very long time in Dunleary for 12 years, and I saw direct build being taken away from local authorities and funding under Fianna Fáil, right, and the PDs. And I'm not having to go, sorry, you, Michael, on that one. But it just happened. Happened to be here, Michael. Sorry about that, but because I know that wouldn't be you wouldn't do that. But what I'm saying is, we are trying to rebuild this. So we had a broken economy where people were unemployed. We're short about 112,000 construction workers that we need by 2020-21. These are people that all left this country because the building industry collapsed. Yeah. We had an economy based around building that collapsed. We've now rebuilt an economy across many sectors, and one of those now being housing.
But it is interesting that it's the office blocks that are being built and the hotels that are being built, and it's not the houses that are being built.
I just need to take a quick break, and Piers, I'll come back to you on housing and homelessness after this. Okay, yeah. We're back, and our conversation has continued over the break, and we'll get straight into it. But Gary has been in touch to say, I don't doubt Maria's passion, but the reality is a 3-bedroom council house around the corner from me has been boarded up and vacant since last June. The local authorities need a kicking. Now, Peter, you were saying that the frustration is there for you with the amount of boarded up and derelict units, and you made reference to it earlier, and you were talking about it over the break. You think there's over 180,000
sitting there. Well, that's a census figure, 183,000 permanently empty boarded up houses and apartments in this country. Now, I accept that many of them are not available. They're in the wrong area. Some of them are mixed up in litigation. Some of them are part of the Fair Deal scheme, but there are many that should be simply
available.
Taken over.
And you believe, Maria, that there's 27,000.
So we had a housing committee around this because we wanted to actually break that down into what is actually achievable to turn around fast, and how they define something as being vacant or usable or habitable, or, you know, all the definitions around that. And what we discovered, it's roughly, and I'm open to being corrected on this, it's roughly somewhere between 25 and 30,000 are the houses that we can pursue now and turn around. A lot are tied up in litigation or aren't in suitable areas or aren't serviced properly or have been derelict for far too long,
so
or don't have a roof on them.
I don't accept the figure. I don't see how you could come across that figure. There's no database of empty houses and apartments, who owns them and why they're lying empty. There is just simply no database. But if there are 27,000 that you can pursue immediately, when are they going to be ready?
Well, they are. Louth County Council have actually led the way on this.
Louth have taken 35 compulsory purchase orders. Every local authority should be doing
it. And they are.
And the Taoiseach should be instructing every local authority to do it. We have an emergency. If we had a foot and mouth disease...
Do I not remember Simon Coveney calling in all the local authorities and getting them to set out how many properties they could turn around and what they were doing about it?
And they did. In fairness, a lot of the voids did come back into use after that. In fairness, they did. But we have an emergency. If it was foot and mouth disease in the morning, Taoiseach would call all the relevant agencies around a table. They would devise how they were going to respond, and he'd have them all back every week, ensuring that they're committing themselves to this agreed plan. This isn't happening. One of the fundamental flaws with the government policy is there is nothing in it to prevent people becoming homeless. Almost nothing. The majority of people becoming homeless today are being evicted from the private rented sector. It should be illegal.
The strength of the RTB in that area.
It should be illegal to evict people into homelessness. That's what we did during the famine days. We evicted families into homelessness because they couldn't pay the rent, and we're still doing it today. Now, a bill was brought to the Dáil a couple of months ago for that purpose, to make it illegal to evict people into homelessness, except in very specific circumstances like antisocial behaviour. But a bill was brought to the Dáil, and it was voted down by the government. They voted against it. Until you prevent more and more people becoming homeless, we're going to continue to get this surge of homelessness, and the problem is never going to be solved.
OK, Pearse Donnelly, I want to bring you in here, because Maria's point is that we just can't do this immediately. It is going to take time, but they're taking all the right steps and doing everything that they can do, but it's not going to happen overnight.
Well, there's a couple of points in that. First of all, the change of direction by government was deliberate, and it was about normalising homelessness. There's no two ways about it.
You can't normalise homelessness.
This is what your attempt in my view,
Conor
was
Skehan,
to do.
Conor Skehan said during the week that homelessness is normal.
Yeah.
There's a homeless crisis in France. There's a homeless crisis in Sweden. There's a homeless crisis in Spain. It's the same everywhere. There's nothing that our government is doing that is wrong compared to all the other countries in Europe. Homelessness is a dreadful thing when it befalls somebody, but it's a normal thing. The word normal is the enemy of the word crisis. Mm. But once you normalise it, you can start to give people challenges, for instance, to say, are we dealing with this as effectively as we could do? So, for instance, our many different homeless charities, and challenge them and said, are you doing this effectively enough? Are you spending public money on something well enough? And when we start to realise that we're the same as all of the other countries in Europe, we start to begin to take the emotion out of this argument, because emotion is the enemy of this.
OK, that was Conor Skehan, chair of the housing agency, speaking on Morning Ireland. When you talk about the use of the word normal, he says it is normal.
Yeah, and what Leo Varadkar was doing in terms of that we're among the lowest in our peer countries, it was trying to do exactly that. When Damien English came out and said the same thing, backed up his agenda and used another report, which again it has got dodgy data in it, and it says very clearly in the first page, you cannot compare this, just like the OECD report. He uses that and then claims that we're scaring off multinationals and damaging in our international reputation, and then we have the minister come out and say the same. This is a strategy by government to normalise homelessness. But I would agree with Maria in one point. This, you can't do this, you can't deliver housing overnight, you can't build the houses overnight, but what you can do at this point in time is put the funding now so that we will have the housing in a couple of years' time. And what they have failed to do in this budget is to actually deliver any, or commit money to deliver any additional social housing above what was announced by the minister
last year. That's not true.
Announced by the minister last year. It's the exact same targets.
Let me just finish on this,
and then you can rebut. The same figures that were announced by Simon Coveney last year on real social housing are what has been funded. The other issue in terms of immediate action that can be taken, the banks and other institutions have offered 1,800 houses. Not all of them are suitable. Only 600 are looking to be taken over, and all of those haven't been taken over. The immediate thing, and I completely agree with Father Peter McVerry here in relation to, and this is where Eileen Gleeson was wrong, many, many people are made homeless overnight because they are evicted because of vacant possession. Now, Ona Brin tabled the Focus Ireland amendment, and that was, as Peter McVerry said, it was to ensure that no one would be able to be evicted into homelessness. What happened? Maria, how did you vote? Fine Gael voted.
Let me just say,
Fine Gael voted an amendment against the Focus Ireland amendment based on research and Fianna Fáil, and that would have helped many, many families, including families in my county who are going to be made homeless because houses are being sold.
We're short on time. Lorcan Sir has been in touch to say he gets his numbers by analysing the real level of house building last year, which Goodbody confirmed to be at 5,200 houses, and he's happy to discuss numbers and stats with Maria at any time.
We get our numbers across many formats, not just one area. But can I just say something to Claire, because I know you're running out of time. Can I just say something to reassure anybody who's listening? In case you're in any doubt that housing is not a priority of this government, it absolutely is. I have young children. I do not want to see any family going through a homeless situation that we have seen in the last couple of years. Any family who declares himself homeless as a last resort is not going into a hotel, thankfully now, it's into a family hub until we find long-term solutions where there's supports available to them. And when you're in the system, they
didn't make it into the conference agenda last week.
They are being placed in hotels.
No. What I said, as a last resort, it would be a hotel. But the first response is into a family hub.
Because 12 families recently were referred to a Garda station.
No family should be going to a Garda station. No family should be going to a Garda station.
Because there's no accommodation available.
I haven't seen any constructive policies coming from your party or from you this morning. I've heard deflection, I've heard rhetoric.
Maria, you voted against the Focus Ireland
because
amendment.
Because I didn't
that we
agree with it, Pierce.
So you believe that people should be evicted into homelessness?
No.
Because that's what's happened with hundreds
of
families.
Let me reassure you, Pierce.
We're actually out of time.
We are about putting a safe roof over people's heads.
All right.
Not about the rhetoric of Sinn Féin.
No, this was meaningful.
We're out of time. Pierce, thank you for joining us from the Ardesh. We look forward to hearing what Gerry Adams has to say later on today. He's referring in particular to his leadership, so that should be interesting. Thank you all very much indeed for coming in. We're back next week at 1 o'clock, and I hope you can join me on the television on Monday night at 10:30. Saturday with Claire Byrne was produced by Anne Farrell. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. Research was by Leslie Anderson, and Noel Roberts was on sound.